As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your official station to talk New York Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 207, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Open with the Knicks, still taking your Knick calls at 888-808-1019. I just think it's a pivotal game. I suppose you could say obviously, Chris, but I just think that you're going to find out who the Pistons are in game two, how they respond to that, because they completely wet the bed. As much as I want to talk about Cameron Payne and those big shots and, you know, coming back from 8 points, 9 points down, going on that run, Brunson finding himself, Karl Anthony Towns and his ability to hit those off-balance shots, the big three-pointer there that helped change the game a little bit, all the layups. To me, the Pistons folded. So tonight, how they respond off of folding is going to tell me a lot about them and how this series is going to go. So we'll see. Looking forward to it. Playoff basketball, there's nothing like it. It's really the Garden for these Knicks is really special. Obviously, just, you know, radio. Spike Lee and all the celebrities. Forget all that. Just the sound in that building, that moment, that 20-1 run, 21-0. I don't know why I keep saying 20-1. 21-0 run was remarkable. But I still think it was more about the Pistons folding. And there were some things defensively I didn't love. I thought the Pistons got a lot of what they wanted in that game. And if it wasn't for them just falling apart, I think it could have been a different game. So the Knicks are going to have to play better, and we're going to find out whether or not the Pistons came to play or not, because it happens once. You can, you know, are they going to learn from it, or is that them? I think that's the question of game two. 888-808-1019. Then, of course, the baseball stuff. The two terrible calls for the New York Yankees, despite still winning the game, are the talking points. Aaron Judge shorted a home run. And obviously, we'll get into Devin Williams. And again, I'm not dismissing how bad Devin Williams has been. Devin Williams has been atrocious. I'm not even going to bring up the idea that it was soft contact, which it was. He still walked the 8 hitter. Unacceptable. But yes, was it a slow grounded to short? Yes. Was it a little bloop single that beat him? Yes. Did he give up some soft contact that still gave up the 4 runs? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean he wasn't awful. He has been awful. But we are so quick to dismiss. He is not just some guy that the Yankees picked up and he's awful. So let's move him out of the closer's role. This is one of the premier relievers in the game. And don't tell me, like so many, like people want to hit me up on Twitter, and I know that's not everyone, but the idea that it doesn't matter what he did in Milwaukee in the National League Central, or that, you know, Pete Alonso has broken him. Like, it's been 3 weeks. Do you want to go through how many Yankees came here and had a miserable first 3 weeks of their Yankee tenure? Because the list is long and filled with names of people you love, Yankee fans. Like, I'm not moving. The last thing I want to do right now is take him and make an example of him and move him out, because it's not the pressure. This is guy, he was just rated the best reliever in all of baseball by Major League, by the MLB Network. I'm not saying that means he absolutely is, but he's in the conversation. He has been dominant for years, years. He is going to be a major part of the success of this team. He is going to be a critical member of this team, and obviously the bullpen. He has been one of, if not the best reliever in baseball for 4 years. I'm sorry, call me crazy. I do not put the last 3 weeks above the last 4 years. It's been a struggle. It's got to change. He admitted in the postgame that he's probably throwing too much of the changeup. I think he's got to mix in the fastball more. He's throwing the fastball 95, 96. It plays. He will be fine. He's off to a miserable start. And whether it's the beard, whether it's the new team, whether it's just some struggles, whether it's the cold, having a baby, the start of being a Yankee, whatever the reason is, there is no reason to push the panic button, even though Saturday was extremely frustrating and sucked. And anytime you blow a 4-run lead, and they talked about it, it's the like one of three times it's happened since 1987 or something crazy. Like, yeah, it's very rare you lose a game up 4 runs in the ninth. And it sucked when they were in the middle of a winning streak. Right now, you'd be talking about a long winning streak, a 7-game winning streak, sweeping the Royals and the Rays on the road, as opposed to winning 3 out of 4, which is still pretty damn good, but wouldn't be as, we'd be much more pleased with the New York Yankees right now riding a 7-game winning streak. And it's a miserable loss, and he's been awful. But I am not, he is the closer of the New York Yankees. They traded for him. He has been one of the best relievers in all of baseball. That's, it doesn't change 3 weeks in. We're not even out of April, and you want to take him out of the closer role? Again, this isn't even Clay Holmes. This is Emmanuel Class A. If they traded for Class A and he got off the three bad weeks, would you want him out of the closer's role? Because that's who Devin Williams is. That's who he's been. We got to slow down. Slow down. I'm frustrated. We're all frustrated. He's got to be better. And if it continues much longer, I'm not saying it can go on for half the year. If it goes on much longer, yeah, you start using him in some different situations, get his confidence built up. It's not crazy, but right now, it's not even April. This is really the only game where he's been bad that they lost. I don't include the extra inning game where he gave up one base hit and lost the game. Right. Devin Williams has a track record of being not just a good, but an excellent closer in this game, in this league. Excellent. 3 weeks doesn't change that. Let's go to Philip in Jamaica, Queens. What's up, Phil?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I want to, before I bring up my Yankee point, talking about no games, it was a perfect game being thrown by the Tigers. His name was Pena, and the umpire, Jim Joyce, called a base hit when he was really out.
Yeah, and that's the Galarraga game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's far worse. I mean, now, it's actually not, it depends on how you look at it. Is it more devastating when it was the last out of a perfect game that he had? Clearly, yes. It's more devastating for the pitcher, for Galarraga, than it was for Max Fried in this situation. But that's an umpire making a mistake. This is an official scorer injecting himself into a situation that he had no business injecting himself into. So I'm more upset with the official scorer than I was with Jim Joyce, the umpire in that situation, for getting the call wrong. It's an umpire making a mistake. We see it a million times. Now, is it a really brutal spot to make a mistake? Absolutely. And he felt terrible about it. He cried on the field the next day when Galarraga walked out the scorecard to him. So, like, I know how terrible he must have felt. But that's a mistake. This is a guy choosing to inject himself into the situation. So I'm actually more annoyed with him than I am the umpire. But clearly, if you're just looking at it from the pitcher's standpoint, clearly Galarraga had a lot more beef than Max Fried does.
Yeah, and then Jim Joyce was classy. He said sorry.
Yeah. What else can you say? I mean, it's not like it was a bang bang play. They showed it on replay. It's clear as day. He was out.
Exactly. And if I was the pitcher, because I pitched, the pitcher handled it great. I would have been ejected from the game. I would have argued.
Well, I mean, the game. I guess you could have, but that was a devastating, devastating moment. But and what's your Yankee point?
It's about DJ LeMahieu. I take the point where the Yankees are in first place. They played really well. Mm-hmm. Don't tinker with the lineup. Why don't they just eat the money? They made a mistake with DJ LeMahieu. Don't put it back in the lineup. The Yankees are playing really, really well. So what do you think?
Yeah, I disagree with you. And not because I want DJ LeMahieu back desperately. Third base has not been good. I mean, that's the thing. They're not interjecting him into a place that's been good. You know, Oswald Peraza hasn't hit, and Oswaldo Cabrera has made two bad errors in the last 2 days and hasn't really hit all that well. And they need right-handed hitting, and, you know, Peraza, again, can't hit, and Cabrera can't hit right-handed at all, even though he's a switch hitter. So if they had a better option, I would take it. I've been screaming about trading for Nolan Arenado. I still want to do that. I would love a better option, but right now I don't see any harm. I don't think they're playing so well, and particularly not at third base, that I can't just at least see after a month or more. Because, again, they're not doing this tomorrow. You're saying, oh, they're on a winning streak, they're in first place, they're playing well. That's all good and well, and maybe that'll continue for a month, and your lips to God's ears. Hopefully it does. But it's still going to be a month or more before DJ, he hasn't even started playing games yet or started his rehab assignment. It's going to be a little bit before they get him back. Who knows how the Yankees will be playing at that point. But at third base has been, if Cabrera was running with it like he was at times early on last year, I would be more inclined to agree with you. He has not played well. He has not played well. And defensively, he hasn't been that great. So for me, I don't think there's any harm in seeing what DJ LeMahieu has. I don't expect much from it. I'm not saying hand him the position once he's healthy. I still want to go out and get a better option than just DJ LeMahieu. But I'm not, and plus DJ LeMahieu is beloved by the team. Reports were that they wanted to cut him last year, and the captain, Judge, said, no, don't do it. So I think he's beloved by the team. I don't think he upsets the apple cart. I don't think he brings in any problems. I mean, he's the most low-key guy. I don't think he's going to cause any issues whether he plays or not. He understands how bad he's been for the last couple of years and how injury-prone he's been. So I think he'd be open to however much he plays. I don't think he's going to cause a problem for Boone or anybody else. I don't think he's going to have an issue at all. So for me, no. See, at this point, if they had better options, I might agree with you. They don't. So see if he is healthy and see if he can give you anything. I don't expect it. I fully anticipate him being bad, but right now it's not like you're getting really good play at third base, even though they're winning. Matt in Caldwell. What's up, Matt?
How you doing, Chris?
Nice good. How are you, buddy? Good talking to you.
Big fan. I can't believe you drove all the way to Florida and back. How was that?
I've done it 3 years running now, so...
I appreciate it. I hate the airfare. My family, I sent my son and my wife down to Orlando this week.
Yeah. Well, this one. I know. And this one in particular was short notice and on spring break. The flight.
Okay.
The flights were outrageous.
That's understandable.
And I just, and plus,
they,
I
they
do,
were.
I,
they were insane.
I do like the journey. I know that this one in particular, because, like, it's one thing to go, like, every time we've driven previously, it's been for the full blown Disney vacation. And we stay, you know, I'm there for like, you know, 9-10 days, and we're doing all the Disney stuff, and like this was literally just
that's
to
a
go.
Long time.
This was literally just to go relax and sit by the pool and go to the beach. Like, so it felt it felt like a long way just to relax. Whereas opposed to like you, when you go down to Disney, I'm going for the experience. I'm going to the parks. I'm going to only something that Disney can provide. And yeah, New York,
right.
And because the day I left, I had snow at my house. I left last Friday, and it snowed at my house.
Right.
So, so technically, New York couldn't provide just hanging by the pool and going to the beach, but it did feel like a long way just to go relax. But
I think it's a beautiful thing, man.
Oh yeah, it's great.
I'm a truck driver.
Love it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I don't mind it. And I got to tell you this too, Subaru. I have a Subaru Ascent.
Okay.
The cruise control, and I'm sure many cars have it. I've been driving.
It's nice, right?
I've been driving Rogues. I've been driving Altimas and Rogues for a long time because I either lived near a Nissan when I lived in Long Island, and now I've just grown accustomed to them, and I've been leasing with them for so long, I get decent deals, or whatever. But like my wife got a Subaru Ascent. The cruise control, I barely have to touch a pedal. Like, I put it in cruise
Beautiful.
Control. The second a car, like, gets in front of me, it automatically slows me down. It keeps me at speed at a good distance. Like, it is it is extreme.
AI is fun, right?
It is such a great car to drive.
But here's the problem.
We love our Subaru.
You got to get past Baltimore, then D.C. to start using it. Because
yes.
there's traffic all
yeah, well,
through there.
Well, when we left at, like, 11 o'clock at night. But, yeah, that's the trip. I get gas in Jersey. I try and make it through. I try to get to Virginia before we stop again, and that's like the plan. You want to get through.
Yeah, you are a night guy. That makes a lot of sense. But
yeah, I slept. I got home from work on Friday morning, and I slept kind of all day, and then we left 11 o'clock at night, and I drove through the night.
You're like me. I work nights myself. I'm a truck driver. So you know what? I keep you on a lot. You're on my app.
You follow me
around in Pennsylvania and everything else. I understand you're a Yankee fan, but you're very fair to the Mets, and I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. I think I am fair to the Mets.
Completely, completely.
Thank you. You're very fair.
You're a good dude.
All right, yeah, so you got something to say, Judge?
I don't know. Look, that comment was made last week. Judge is an amazing hitter.
Yes.
Amazing. During the regular season.
Let's
look at the post. Both of these teams are geared for the postseason.
Correct.
Face the facts.
Mm-hmm.
When Judge gets in the postseason, what's he do?
Well, he hasn't the last. Nothing. Again, I don't want to have this argument over and over again. The last two postseasons, he's done absolutely nothing. Worse than nothing, he's been a negative to the team. There is no doubt about it. He has been atrocious the last two postseasons. If you look past that, he's had some good postseasons. Nobody wants to hear that. It's excuse making. Whatever. He had good postseasons prior to 2021. Since 22 and 24 in particular were so freaking bad with so many strikeouts that it clouds anything else he did in the postseason because that's how bad those two have been. There's no doubt about it. So, but in my mind, and again, this goes back to my comments about Devin Williams, I will take the large sample size over the small sample size. And for me, we have seen Judge struggle in many given three-week periods, including the playoffs now. I still think he's the best hitter on the planet, and I have, believe this or not, full confidence that the next time he's presented with the playoffs, he'll be great because he's a great hitter who's always great. And he's had a couple of bad postseasons, but that doesn't mean he can't hit in the postseason. He has hit in the postseason. He hit in the Boston series. He hit in multiple Astros series. He's hit a home run in the two wild card games they won. Like, he has had good postseasons. The last two have been atrocious. Atrocious. But he's so good, I would take him over any hitter in baseball. Like, if the playoffs started tomorrow, I want Aaron Judge hitting up in the biggest spot of the game because he's the best hitter. Plain and simple. Now, again, I've talked about this a lot. Once they get into the series, then that changes. If Judge is 0 for his last 13 with 11 strikeouts, then sure, I'll pick somebody else because he's not going well at the moment. But just some arbitrary future date, give me Aaron Judge over anyone in baseball. Aaron in Monmouth County. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. You took the words out of my mouth, Aaron Judge over there. The Devin Williams comparison with the guys who are booing Aaron Judge in April and worried about spring training before, you know, last year going on to have the most spectacular offensive year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
This year in particular, I want to focus on one thing. He's leading the league in hits now, I believe. Is that correct?
I'm not 100% positive, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is leading the league in hits. I mean, he's been...
Right.
And it's not just been home runs. He's been getting base. He's been getting singles. And he's kind of cooled off on the home runs, but his batting average is still in 380. And he's been, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's leading the league in hits.
Right. And that's exactly what I want to kind of focus on, because that might paint a shift in approach in what he's having. He's not just looking for that home run. He's looking for that RBI. He's looking for those base hits. You know, last year, Bobby Witt was the second place contender with a lot more hits than he did. Right now, that's not the picture. And if that's true for the postseason also, you don't need the home runs. If you have guys that get on base, Goldschmidt, you get him on base before you, get Ben Rice on base before you, then you've got that RBI single for two RBIs. That's a great postseason.
Yeah, I don't think that Aaron Judge is trying to hit singles. I don't think he's changed his game. I think he's just happened to be, I mean, at the start of the year, he was the first one of six home runs. He was hitting home runs every other swing. So you're saying, for the first 2 weeks, he was trying to hit home runs, and now he's focusing on singles. He's just hitting. He's hitting the ball hard. He hasn't gotten the lift. He hit one today that should have been a home run. That's now not a home run. But I think he's just hitting. I don't think he's made a concerted effort to get less home runs or to change anything. He's just hitting. And he's hitting some, he's getting, you know, he's not getting the lift on some of them, or you know, they're pitching him lower in the zone. I don't know. But, I mean, he's still getting base hits. I don't think it's a concerted effort to say, hey, I need to be a better postseason player. And in the postseason, I need to get more singles. Like, I really don't think that's it. I think he's just doing what he does. And right now, he's on a lesser home run stretch than he was 2 weeks ago, and that he will be again in 2 weeks. He'll go on another home run tear. He's going to hit 50 home runs. If he's healthy, you could take it to the bank. He's hitting 50 home runs, hitting 55 home runs. He might hit, I would say 55 to 57 is a lock if he plays 155 games. A lock. So whether he's hitting them now, whether he's hitting them in bunches, whether he's getting a lot of singles now, he's always been a pretty good, I mean, the last couple of years he's hit 320. Like, he's been in the top three batting average. It's not like he's not Adam Dunn. He's not Jim Thome. He's not Mark McGwire. He's not hitting home runs and not doing anything else. He's been a 300 hitter these last couple of years. He's been good at everything. Abe in Brooklyn, what's up, Abe? You're on the Fan.
Yeah, how you doing? How's your vacation?
It was good. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, so about that error changing the hit over there, so like sort of state of error. Like, can't be happy about that after your no-hitter with something that should have been a hit that's called an error.
Yes, say it to me one more time. You can't be happy. If you're Max Fried, you can't be happy.
Right. I'm saying even if it stays an error, it's still really a hit.
Oh, you're saying that it would be something that would hang. Even if he threw a no-hitter, many people would say that should have been a hit.
Yeah, it's like winning a game and he cheated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would have felt like Max Fried cheated. Someone else made a decision. I don't think it's the same. I mean, now it hangs over the, at least, you know, for Met haters or whatever, the Santana no-hitter, the Beltran, what should have been a double down the line but was called foul, it's still a no-hitter. I really don't think Santana sits around going, man, if only... I mean, that thing's hanging over me. I feel like I didn't have a no-hitter. I feel like I cheated that day. I don't think Santana feels like he cheated. And I don't think Max Fried would have felt anything different than I threw a no-hitter. I do agree with you, though, that it was a hit. That's how you know that you are dead wrong. Because you're right, and I'm pissed off. You're right, and we're all annoyed. Like, it's very rare that someone is right, and yet everybody is pissed off about it. But the official scorer actually gets the call right. He just does it in a point in time that you can't do it. You can't make the change then and there. You got to live with being wrong. You can't go back and revisit it. It's a terrible, terrible mistake and a lapse in judgment. Once he gives up the hit in the eighth inning, you want to go change it back to give him two hits instead of one hit? That's fine. You can't take away a no-hitter in between innings. You can't do it. You just can't. You can't do it. You can't let everybody think for an extra two innings that he's throwing a no-hitter and then suddenly change it. Can't do it. But ultimately, yeah, I do agree. I was watching the, I switched to ESPN briefly, and ESPN was the, I forget who it was, forgive me, but one of the, they was like Baseball Tonight, and he was talking about, oh, I don't care how fast the runner is, that's a booted ball, it's an error. I'm like, no, it's not. That's a base hit. If everything was fielded correctly, he was still going to be safe. That's a base hit. That's like almost the definition of a base hit with those plays like that. Would it have mattered? If he like, if you're telling me it doesn't matter whether or not he whether or not Goldschmidt could have made the play, I don't know how you could see it that way. When you look at that play, you got to say, "Hey, if everything was fielded cleanly and perfect, would they have gotten him?" And the answer is no. Clearly, the answer is no. That is not an error. That is a base hit. You just can't make the call then and there.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Well, in the end, it's the Knicks that land Carmelo Anthony from Denver, and Amari Stoudemire happy that he's on hand. Stoudemire, addressing the media today, says the team will be hard to guard now, likes the idea of having that 1-2 punch.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 237, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. So I've talked a little bit about the vacation. The one thing I did just want to say, and I briefly mentioned it before, but my guy Bert, who I have communicated with on Twitter, he says he's called the show a couple times. He told me the two favorite shows I've ever done, of his two favorite shows of mine that we've ever done was when Juan Soto signed with the Mets and after the World Series. This is a big Met fan. He's come at me on Twitter occasionally, but when he heard I was going to Naples, he's living down there, working down there. I forgot to ask him if he's from down there, but I'm assuming not because he's a big Met fan, but maybe he is. He reached out to me and said, why don't you come down to one of these restaurants I work with? You guys, you and your family have an open invitation. So we went down to this restaurant called Mr. Big Fish. It was incredible. It was a great dinner. If you're ever in Naples, go check out Mr. Big Fish. It was really a great dinner. And my guy Bert took care of us like you wouldn't believe. It was a great experience. I got to meet him, took a picture with him, talked with him, conversed with him. And it's making me think that, hey, and he's already getting on me now for tweaking the Met fans for the Juan Soto comments. And when I met him, it was the day of the Juan Soto comments. I think it was the Tuesday afternoon that the It was Tuesday afternoon when the comments were made, I think, about Aaron Judge hitting behind him and people are pitching him differently this year. And many people took it as an excuse. Or just, look, was it something he should have said? No, I think people blew it way out of proportion. And I think that we all know that this was something we discussed. He asked the Mets specifically to sign Pete Alonso because he needs protection. I mean, Aaron Judge doesn't need protection, but that's okay. But neither does really Juan Soto. Let's be totally honest with you. He was dominating the World Series with Howie Kendrick behind him. Like, he was off to a little bit of a slow start. We all know how great Juan Soto is going to be. He might not be as great as last year. He might not have the best year of his career. He's going to be a great Met. He's here for a long time. He's going to have great years. He's going to have slightly down years. Like, that's part of life. But those comments are blown out of proportion. But I saw him that day, Bert, and he was like annoyed about it. Expected me to comment. But my point is that we could still be friends. I can still get invited down to the restaurant. I can still take him up on it. We can still meet, talk, hang out. It was a beautiful thing. And again, if you're ever in Naples, which, by the way, was gorgeous. I was there for 4 days. I did not see a cloud. It was like 86 and perfect every day. We went to the beach. It was incredible. Naples is a really, really nice area. And one of the better things we had was the seafood dinner at Mr. Big Fish. So go check it out. And Yankee fans and Met fans, we can all be friends. We can disagree and still be friendly. And that goes for all the people fat shaming me for my picture. I didn't even think I was that fat in that picture. I mean, yeah, I've got a big face. It's part of it. And it really wasn't to, you know, it was just having some fun. That's the other thing. Like, can we have some fun about this? It is sports. It is fun. I was just having some fun. I was feeling good. I was driving. It was beautiful out. I was listening to Met fans complain about Juan Soto while Aaron Judge was coming off a big game and leading the world and everything. So I had a little fun with the picture. And I got people like, you know what's funny? The people who, I got one tweet that makes me laugh, right? Because I appreciate people's concern for my health or whatever. Not really, but the best is, because this happens a lot. People will insult me and be as harsh, like, oh my God, eat a salad, blah, blah, blah. Like, just, you know, go off on me about, you know, I mean, learn how to go to bed hungry. Oh my God, just absolutely kill me. And then at the end of it go, I do this because I care about you. I'm trying to help you. Yeah, it sounds like it. How noble of you. Like, it'd be one thing if it was just like, hey, Chris, honestly, I did this, or I know someone who did that. You should, you know, try and get protein. And look, man, it's, you know, I'm a big fan. But it's like, you this, that, oh my God, darn, oh, it's embarrassing. I do this because I care. People are funny on Twitter. You can say whatever you want. Enjoy it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. And that was just what Boomer said. No, I'm just kidding. Oh boy. All right, let's get to Aaron Rodgers a little bit. I want to get to the draft as well. And something, you know, again, a lot happened over the week, and I heard a couple things as I was in and out. And one thing that Joe Shane said that I still don't understand what the Giants are thinking, and we'll see what happens on Thursday. But the Jets and the Aaron Rodgers comments, I do have to get to this a little bit because you know how I feel. You know where I've been. You know where I stand. You know my thoughts on this. Aaron Rodgers should be the quarterback of the New York Jets. That's how I feel. That's over with. That's done with. I'm not going to rehash that. But what happened with their meeting, to me, makes the Jets look and the coach and the GM and the organization, just the Jets in general, Woody Johnson on down, look terrible to me. And I know, let's start with a couple of facts, right? Number one, Aaron Rodgers has put himself in a position where I don't think you can call him a flat-out liar, necessarily. I mean, if you want to, I suppose you can. But I do think he's put himself in a position where you can't go by every word he says and take it 100% literal. Did the meeting last within 20 seconds? Was, hey, I'm gonna go find Muji? Or, like, was it immediate? Were there more pleasantries? Did it last a little bit longer than he says? Like, all those things. But I don't think he's flat out lying about the tenor of the conversation, right? Let's get there. And then let's get to the other obvious thing that I don't know how you dispute. Before you get into anything else about Aaron Rodgers, here's the one thing that I don't think we can dispute at all. It is foolish not to use every avenue and every piece of information you can as a new regime coming to a team that you're unfamiliar with in every way, right? The famous line of, you don't know me, I don't know you. Hey, AG, you don't know anybody associated with the New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers, whatever his failings might be as a teammate or a distraction or anything else you want to say, he is one of the more brilliant minds in professional football. That's what he is. He is one of the smarter, like, not only is he talented, but he's one of the most cerebral quarterbacks we've ever seen. He knows offense. He knows football as well as anyone associated with the team. And, by the way, he's also the only one who's ever won a damn thing associated with the team. to not at least have a conversation with him about players on the team, how he viewed last year, his opinions on the failings of last year, what's gone on in the organization, even if it's negative about the owner, even if it's negative about the team, even if it's negative about a regime that is not there anymore and you're coming in and changing all of that, the idea not to at least have a legitimate sit-down conversation and not alienate the conversation before you have it is just flat-out stupid to me. And I don't know how anyone argues with that basic fact. Whether or not they flew him out, or should I say, allowed him to fly out and have a five-minute conversation, whether that's fair to him, or anything else that followed in the conversation, to it not at least use him, even if it is using him, even if you have no intention of bringing him back, which, by the way, I think that's the case. I think this was a mandate from on high, and before that meeting even happened, Glenn and Muji had no ability to make a decision. And that's probably why he didn't want to have the conversation, because he didn't want to annoy himself knowing I'm having a conversation that I can't even base information on and make a decision on, because I've been told from on high that he's not the quarterback. This has always felt, it continues to feel, and this story doesn't change it for me, that this was made by the owner. He didn't want Aaron Rodgers back. And Muji and Glenn had absolutely no say in the matter. Whether they wanted to or not, I can't. Whether they agreed with that decision or not, I don't know. But it feels like it wasn't theirs to be made. But at the very least, have a conversation with the guy. Find out about the team. You know, no one else is, like, who are you going to find out? What other veteran, like, you know, this is an opportunity to speak with someone who's been around, who's won, who's been around winning teams, who's won a championship, who's had a hell of a lot more of an impactful and successful career than even you, Aaron Glenn. Take a moment and have a legitimate assessment of the team and franchise from his perspective. You don't have to believe everything he says or agree with everything he says, but to dismiss having that opportunity is absolutely asinine to me. So that's the beginning. You know, I'm not alone in saying it. A lot of people have said it. I don't know how you don't agree with that assessment. I don't know how you don't agree with the idea that that at least should have been a meeting where they have an honest and open conversation and you get Aaron Rodgers' opinion on players and situations, what happened, the organization, the whole nine. There's no, that's a source of information. And to turn away a Hall of Fame quarterback's information is stupid to me. So that's the first and foremost. The whole thing is handled poorly just on that basis. Now, whether or not they were as dismissive, whether or not, like, here's my whole point with Aaron Glenn, too. And I've said this from the beginning, and one of the main reasons I hated the idea that they dismissed Rodgers as the quarterback of the team and some of the messaging around it. Because he literally, if you believe Aaron Rodgers, and I do believe the gist of what he said, and I do believe most of the things he said happened, whether or not they happened in the same tone or manner or same timing, I think that's up for debate, because let's be honest, everybody tells their version of the truth in some manner. But I do believe that he said something along the lines of, I don't want to be talking up at the front of the room, worried about you in the back of the room. Worried about all the players turning to you, which leads me to my biggest point about all of this, which was the idea that he's coming over as a culture builder. This is where I have a problem. And this is what makes me think and hope that it is an edict from up on high, from the owner, because if Aaron Glenn, who I, from everything I see, has supreme confidence in himself, like, are you telling me, like, it goes one of two ways. One, you don't have the belief in yourself as a coach to be able to hold the room as long as Aaron Rodgers is there? Like, this is the strength. This is what he's being hired for. And he doesn't believe in his ability to hold the room, to have people listen to him without checking in on Aaron Rodgers' opinion on it? I find that extremely telling into the mindset of a coach who's telling me, and pretty much we're being sold on, his culture building skills and setting a new regime and setting a new standard, and yet that can't be done with Aaron Rodgers in the room. Can't be done. I don't want to worry about what you'll say in the back. Like, are you good at this or not? And I suppose your counter-argument is, well, being good at it is deciding which guys you can and can't have in the room. Maybe. But I think that that is a pretty damning statement to the idea of, well, I'm a great leader, and I'm a great motivator, and I'm a great culture builder, as long as it's easy. Well, I would imagine a lot of people are. I would think I would want to hire a great culture builder because I don't know if it's going to be easy. And then the other thing is, call me crazy, and especially when the alternative is Justin Fields, which everybody tells me, you know, well, Aaron Rodgers hasn't been good for a while. Well, when exactly has Fields been good? Ohio State? It's been a while. Well, Aaron Rodgers, you know, let's be honest. He wasn't good last year. He wasn't good the year before. Even the last year with Green Bay hasn't been that good. When's the last time Aaron Rodgers was good? When's the last time Justin Fields was good? And if you're telling me that this guy has the ability to hold the team in his hands, that I'm worried about you leading the team, what if you guys have a good meeting and agree? Like, what about a culture builder where you and the quarterback who can hold the team in his hand see eye to eye? Well, wouldn't that be some sort of, like, wouldn't you want to just have the conversation and see where that goes? Because wouldn't that be an asset to you if you did see eye to eye on the way football is supposed to be played? Like, to make preconceived notions about what Aaron Rodgers is, who he is, and what he's going to be when they apparently said to each other, you don't know me, I don't know you. And Aaron Rodgers is like, yeah, that's the point. That is the point, isn't it? What if Aaron Rodgers had some of the same issues with the organization that you might have with the organization if you were in the room? What if vision somewhat aligned? You think the guy's capable of holding the whole team in his hand. Isn't the quarterback supposed to be that kind of player? Now, again, do I have a... I think they should have kept him. Is it the end of the world they moved on? No. Can we find out within 3 weeks of the season that they made the right move? Maybe. It's not the be-all, end-all. I don't think he's still the Hall of Fame caliber quarterback he was in the prime of his career. I just think he happens to be the best available quarterback. But I'm done screaming and yelling about whether or not he should be here. I understand why he's not. We can move on from it. But how it was handled and the idea that it's about culture and you don't think you could do it unless it's easy. And it's about culture, but you don't want to see if you might have a melding of the minds with a guy you think can literally turn the team in his favor. Like, I'm just confused on what's going on here. I'm confused on what the Jets are trying to do. And I just think how they handle this. Like, this is a guy who has been, since his opening press conference, which I think he did a great job in, since that opening press conference, every time he's faced the media, it seemed adversarial. I mean, he seems, you know, very concerned with making sure he gets his message, answering the questions he wants to answer, kind of dismissing the questions he doesn't want to answer. Now, the way he handles this meeting, do you want to play football? Ending it within 20 seconds, not using a tool right in front of you to learn about the team, and not being even interested in having a conversation if you want to have a Hall of Fame quarterback who's the only one who's ever won a damn thing associated with this franchise, who you think has enough power in the room to have him be more important than you in the room. Wouldn't you want to just go down that road for an afternoon? Like, it just, I don't know. It seems like the same old stuff with the Jets. It seems like he was told by the owner, Aaron Rodgers is not going to be the quarterback. they were looking to see if they could get him on some sort of indecisiveness on whether he wants to still play and is getting retirement. Asked him a couple of gotcha questions, and when they got the answer they could use, they just dismissed it. And it just seems like they're spinning their wheels, doing the same crap every other Jet regime has done. Acting like they're smarter than everybody. Acting like they don't need to know what others might have as far as knowledge on the team, on the room, on whatever else is going on. They have an idea of how it's supposed to be, and they will not be deterred. And they don't want to hear what anybody else has to say. I thought they come off looking terrible. I thought they did. Now, having said that, it's about winning games and putting good quality football on the field. And I don't think he's incapable of doing that. But I'm just saying, they hired a coach based on the idea that he's a culture builder, and he's afraid of a challenge when it comes to that department. That scares me. I would think he would welcome challenges for talent. Bring me the talent, and I'll deal with the culture issues. That's what I would think a great culture coach would do. Not, hey, if there's any issues, I don't care about the talent.